Hey there, welcome to the show. Wow, you know what? It's incredible. We are past halfway through February. And is there something in the air? I don't know. But I think the real estate market might be turning around. But, you know, one of the things that is so important to us here at the station and, of course, on the show Simply Real Estate is making sure that we talk to the real people that are actually living and breathing this. And, you know, it's amazing because I was able to reach out to an old friend of mine and, you know, and people are going, oh, great, some old friend. Yeah, I'll tell you. Let me tell you about him. You know, the incredible thing is my friend is Sam McDaddy, of course, of Sam McDaddy Real Estate Brokerage. And, you know, you can't miss that name. If you haven't been hiding under a rock, you've seen Sam's name in the news all the time regarding real estate. Sam is the premier number one broker in all, the entire GTA. And that's one of the incredible things. Number of sales, I can't even guess how many now. I think probably Small Planet would cover it. And, you know, with over 35 years of experience, you know, definitely Sam has seen all aspects of the market. And fortunately for me, you know, he's been good enough that he's come into the studio today, and we're going to have him join us in a sec. But hey, listen, you know, so much going on the face of real estate. You know, you'll hear me rant. By the way, make sure you catch up to my Simple podcast. You can catch it after the show, you know, by all means. This is where I get to be a little bit, you know, a little bit offside, and I have a lot more fun with it too. So make sure you catch that. Go to simpleinvestor.com if you want to know about our newest release. Hey, we do have, believe it or not, a mortgage product where your next release with us, you can get 3.99 for 3 years. That's right. We do a mortgage buy down so you can get into cash flowing real estate. It's our final release right now, and incredible product. Can you actually believe you can get something for $284,000 for a condominium, one bedroom, 700 square feet? Well, you know what? Go to simpleinvestor.com. You can find out more about it. But you know, without further ado, Sam, so amazing to see you. Great to have you in the studio.
Great to see you again, Todd.
So, you know, it's amazing. I do see you all the time, by the way, but not that you can see me. So I do catch you at the Raptors games every once in a while. I catch you on TV. So you are. I'm not going to call you the super fan because, of course, that's your buddy Nav, but you're a huge fan of the Raptors.
I've become that over the last 5 years. The journey started about 5 years ago, and I had the privilege of having courtside seats. The first year I went, they won the whole thing. So it was really wonderful. And since then, I've been a diehard fan and, you know, had a pretty good affiliation with the Raptor organization as well.
Yeah. You know, let's talk about that just for a second. I don't know if our listeners know this, but you are the official realtor for the Raptors. And that must be a really cool thing.
It's wonderful. We've had a chance to build this relationship organically, and you know, we've helped most of the players and the coaches, so that was just a natural progression for us.
Yeah. So, you know, when you know, I don't know if you have to have special product, because I mean, some of those guys, boy, are they tall. I mean, I I'm vertically challenged, but I just can't imagine how high the sinks have to be when you look at houses. Do they actually make houses for taller people?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, you know, when you look at them on court, I mean, guys like Freddie, who's 6'1", looks pretty small, but I mean, he's actually a reasonably tall guy, but they're all close to 7 foot. So it's pretty interesting. And even the cars now we used to show the players, we've got a pretty long Maybach to make sure they can fit in comfortably. So yeah, it poses challenges, but I mean, I guess we have to find places that make sense for them. And you know, they're a great bunch of guys, though, regardless.
Yeah. Oh, no. I you know, it's amazing. Like I said, big fan, obviously, you know, Toronto Raptors. Hopefully they can turn the season around. I know you're there, you know, cheering them on. But, you know, do you think we're going to get a bit of a run here in the spring? Or?
Well, after, you know, All-Star break, which happens this weekend, hopefully they can find some momentum. And, I mean, the goal is to make the play-ins. I mean, I don't think they're going to finish top eight, but if they get to 9 or 10, they can free roll and hopefully have some success. But, you know, it's a building year for them for sure. I mean, they've made a lot of changes, and, you know, I'm sure they've got something up their sleeve. Maybe not for this year, but next year I think things will hopefully come together. And it's a new group, new coaching, so everything has to gel, and it does take time.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's like I said, really, really cool to actually to get kind of the inside. And I know you do a lot of events with some of the team members, and you know, it's great to see. You know, they're a very supportive organization for a lot of great charities in the GTA, and I think that that's wonderful that they do give back.
When you get to know them, and I think that's why we got behind the Raptors and became the official brokerage, is that, you know, it's just wonderful from top to bottom, right? So we've really enjoyed the experience. And, you know, truthfully, being at the games is just incredible. Sometimes going there, you know, you're fighting the traffic. It's a little bit of a, you know, hassle. Once you're there, you're just enjoying the energy. And I think really sitting at a Raptors game, the energy, the enthusiasm, the entertainment, there's probably second to none.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know, as you mentioned, you know, a little bit of traffic. Yeah, it doesn't seem to be getting much better. And, you know, I hear rumors that, you know, the city's going to close a few more lanes here and there. They're not making it easy for us unless you're always on public transit.
It's honestly from where it used to be now. I mean, it, case in point, we park underground at the Raptor games. So when we're coming back, it's 20, 25 minutes. So it tells you that's what it should be. Maybe at 10, 15 minutes we're going there. I'm always leaving an hour and a half early because I just don't know what it's going to look like. Sometimes it's a clear path. Other times you're just, you know, bumper to bumper, right? So it's, and it has gotten worse over the last few years for sure.
Yeah. So Sam, lots to talk about today. You know, I do want to talk to you about some important stuff, but let's talk about 2023 before we, you know, jump ahead. So 2023, lowest number of transactions in the last 20 years. So they had to dig in deep. And I think, and this was back when you and I were having some fun in Mississauga. I think we were like around 2001 or 2002 was when they had about 65,000 sales. And I mean, big different market then, but today, you know, looking at 65,000 sales in the GTA, not a very busy year. What did you and your team see while you're, you know, looking at that year?
It was a difficult year. Yeah, it was interesting. We had a few false starts. I believe April, May, we had a pretty good month or two when rates stabilized. And we thought the fall was going to pick up when the message was, yeah, rates are flat. They're not going up. But the secondary message was, well, we still reserve the right to increase rates. So I think the secondary message probably slowed things down for us. Q4 for us was, you know, a pretty slow, soft, you know, period for us. And it's difficult because we have a team and you want to keep everybody motivated, and sometimes the sales just aren't there. And I think people are sitting on the sidelines trying to question where the market was going, what the prices were going to do, all of the above. So yeah, we definitely had challenges in 2023. I mean, and you're right, for us, our sales volume was considerably down from our peak of 2021, where we hit, you know, 1.4 billion in sales and maybe helped 1,440 families, which was our benchmark. And you know, I think 2023 is maybe 50 cents on the dollar for us. It was materially different, right? So
yeah, so tell us a little bit about your team now that you mentioned it. You know, you've got a pretty extensive team that you span across the GTA.
So we initially start off in Mississauga, our first office, and you know, Todd and I go back a long way, have a lot of respect for everything you've done, and we keep talking about that. But you're, you know, a great role model for realtors and your vision and helping people build wealth, which we really respect. But, you know, we start off in North Mississauga, then bought a place in South Mississauga, and then subsequently added five other offices, one in Hamilton, Burlington, Oakville, Milton, and Yonge and Lawrence. So we're pretty much, you know, across the GTA, which has kind of been our goal from the onset. Once we kind of had market strength and share in Mississauga, we grew to the GTA. But we've got currently about 60 realtors, and we could have more, but it's quality over quantity. We don't want 400 or 500 realtors. We're not running a traditional brokerage. So everybody who works with Sam McDaddy Real Estate Inc. is part of the team. So it's not an outside agent working with their organization. So there's team camaraderie and benefits to accrue with that, just like your office, which we see here today. And all our service providers are full-time, our stagers, our movers, our inspectors, our marketing team, our photographers. So it gives us control over quality and time efficiency as well. And you know, with the realtors last year, it was a challenge because, I mean, the numbers were definitely less than what they're used to making. So our perspective is to try and lead gen and provide support and opportunities. But when the market isn't there, you just have to come to terms with that, which also leads to one of the things I think we're going to talk about as well, is good financial planning, right? Because you have to weather difficult days, you have to save for any day, and a lot of times people don't do that.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. You know, when we talk about the industry as a whole, you know, it's not always a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. It's not a consistent place to be. Sam, you've weathered, you know, obviously different years and different economies. You know, I definitely want to dive into that in a little while, because, you know, when you first started, you know, I probably, you know, just a few years before me, I think early 90s in that time frame, you know, they're coming out of a major recession, obviously a market crash of 88, 89. I mean, you know, the market was decimated there for quite a while, in a completely different market. You know, when we take a look at, you know, 23 and 22, I don't think it was anything like the years that were in the very beginning back in the late 80s. because we just didn't see volume, but you didn't see the prices come back. You know, like when we go back to the early days, I mean, prices, we watched them correct 40-50%, you know, but there's some stuff out there in, you know, out in the West End here, the price didn't move. It just, the people didn't decide to sell.
Yeah. I got in the business late 80s, 88, 89, and I had about 3-4 really good months, actually a couple of good months. I was thinking, oh, this is going to be, you know, it's making money, it's not that difficult. And then April of 89, the market turned, interest rates hit double digits, and we were in a tough recessionary period, almost depressionary period for about 4 or 5 years till maybe 95, 96. And so, I mean, but truth be told, that was probably the best time to learn your craft and hone your craft, because it was a difficult period. A lot of times, unfortunately, realtors in the last few years have been order takers, and they haven't really, you know, understood how to really sell, understand how to work with your clients. It's just been kind of easy just to fill that order, right? So when we kind of went into it in the early 90s, I mean, we had to really, you know, it was a grind. Yeah, it was a grind for sure. And we had to really, you know, weather the storm, because it was, you know, until finally things started turning. But I think we were better for it because of that.
Yeah. I mean, I can remember signing listings for 6 months or a year. You know, today, I think if you ask somebody for that, they'd think that you're crazy. Sam, listen, stay put. Folks, when we come back, I'm going to have more with Sam McDaddy. And, you know, it's great having him here. For you agents out there, you're going to want to stay put, because I'm going to be asking Sam for his advice, you know, about teens, about being an agent. There's so much to discuss, so you don't want to miss out on the rest of it. And if you're not following us right now on Instagram, do it, The Simple Investor One. And, you know, I try to keep everybody up to date on what's going on in the world of real estate. And when we come back, we've got more with Sam McDaddy. Stay with us. We'll be right back after this. And welcome back. If you're just tuning in, my guest in studio today is Sam McDaddy. And, you know, for those of you in the West End, I mean, I don't think you could ever drive down a street without seeing one of Sam's for sale signs or sold signs. But for those of you that haven't met or heard of Sam, Sam is the number one real estate team in the GTA. And with 35 years of experience, there's a reason why. Incredible team. But definitely somebody with a vision. Sam, just before the break, you know, we're obviously talking about some of the rough times that people would be having, especially in the last year and a half, 2 years of the real estate market. You know, one of the things that I watched, and I have to be a number cruncher when it comes down to the economies and everything that's going on. You know, when I watched February 22 unleash, you know, I think you as a professional realtor was probably going, you know, you got uncomfortable, because the run up in the price was, you and I both know, we're not going to be sustainable. The unfortunate thing is people were feeding that fire like it could keep going. And when a price goes up 10% in 1 month, yeah, folks, that's going to tell you that you need to either run from that market, get out of that market, because it's not going to hang in there. We watched, you know, people die on the sword. But interestingly enough, you know, I've been doing some speaking at some different events, and people are sitting there saying, well, you know, we're never going to see those prices again that we did in 22. And, you know, that kind of is reminiscent of some different years that you and I have heard that, you know, prices will never go there again. And yet, I think we're probably 24 months out from going back there. So let's talk about the market today. Here we are, fast forward, we're into 2024. You know, we're halfway through February. What's the market look like?
It's been a positive market. We've done very well. So the first 6 months, and I'll step back and tell you that initially I thought I wasn't convinced 2024 is going to be a great year. I thought it might be lackluster. We may not see the market pick up till 2025. And all of a sudden in January, the market was showing signs of resiliency, which it always does. It never ceases to amaze me how resilient we are here, right? So January and mid-February, our numbers have been very lofty, very good. I mean, much better than we anticipated. And we think that's going to carry throughout the year.
So I think Tiff Macklin has something to not say about that. And when I say that is that at the last Bank of Canada meeting, you know, you had talked in the earlier part that, you know, we had those start and stops in 23 where, you know, they froze the rates, but they always had that cautionary tale that they said, hey, look, you know what, if you guys misbehave, we're going to keep putting pressure on the rates. January's meeting, there was nothing said. In fact, they said, okay, we're not making the rates go up, but they didn't say, but if you don't behave, we're going to increase it. In fact, it's the first time they have not said anything about future increases. And I don't know if that's kind of a flag to a lot of people saying, hey, look, we're done for sure. You know, the next thing that we're going to see is a reduction.
I don't think rates are going up. At best, you might seem level for a little longer than we anticipated, and you might see rates come down, you know, instead of the spring, maybe the summer. But I think the rates going up again, I believe, in my opinion, are a thing of the past, at least in the short term. So I think that's given people confidence to enter the marketplace. And a lot of people were there, but they're just sitting on the sidelines. And I'll give you a perfect example, Todd. There was a semi-detached, you're probably aware of it, in Mississauga, which was priced artificially low, but they had approximately 90 offers on the property, right? So that tells you there's 90 buyers still sitting there, right? So that means there are people there waiting to kind of get back into the game. And that was a perfect microcosm of what I think is happening today in the market.
Yeah, I hate to say it this way, and people kind of go, Todd, that's not very nice, but there was one winner, 89 losers in the offer process, you know, and you're right, Sam. I mean, what that tells you is that there is an appetite for people to come into the market. Of course, price has a lot to do with it, and interest rates do. But so then here, let me pose a question, because a lot of people like to time a market. And I always tell you, look, you know what, if you're talking about investment real estate, there's no perfect time to buy it, just buy it, you know, get into it, get going. But if you're going to be a owner, you know, going to be owner occupied, you know, everybody's trying to get the best deal. Has the market, are we on bottom? And the reason why I ask that is because there's so many people say, yeah, but maybe I can get it for a little better deal. I think what's going to happen in the market's going to bounce. And when the market bounces, you know, the pent-up demand, you know, what's accumulated over 18 months, I think it's going to be staggering, actually, the amount of volume that we will be able to do. I don't necessarily think prices are going to overshoot like they did in 22, but that's because interest rates just aren't going to be there, right? Like, let's be real. We're not ever going to see that interest rate again. So let's get that out of our heads. But ultimately, in the end, I think we're at the bottom. I think all we're going to see now coming into the spring, I think prices are going to go up.
I concur. And we are telling people, December, November, you know, it's really a good time to buy. You can't pick tops or bottoms, but it feels like we're pretty close to that. And we're buying properties that are 10 to 20% discounted over a year ago. You're doing well. You're ready to buy a property a year ago. You lost out. Now you can come back in materially less. What are you waiting for? I mean, you're waiting for another 5-10 offers. You've got a clear path today. So people have the herd mentality. And I think that's unfortunate, because if you can have the courage to go against the grain, you'll succeed. And I think today we are pretty close to the bottom. And I think we tell people today, you should buy today. And, you know, can it go down a few percentage? Possibly. In my opinion, I agree with you. I don't think you'll see 20% increases this year, but I think we're trending upward again.
Yeah. I mean, you know, we've had some stats, people are throwing them out. They're saying 5%, 8%. But look, if you're talking, you know, an $800,000 property, that's 40 grand, you know, and $40,000 in your pocket's a lot better than in the next seller. And so, you know, Sam, a lot of times when I start talking about real estate markets bouncing, you know, I get a little bit of chatter, you know, from a social aspect of things, that they say, yeah, but Todd, you're just trying to encourage sales. And it's actually not, actually, because I think one of the things that you have done incredibly well, and especially part of the your training of your team, is the fact you've taught them that each person, each client is an individual. You don't over push. You're not selling them something. And I think that's probably the smartest piece of advice you can give any realtor, is that stop thinking about selling somebody. Start thinking about what they need, right? And if somebody needs a house to live in today, well, then take care of it. If they're just thinking about it, well, let them continue to think about it before you actually get them into a house.
I think being a counselor is critically important. A lot of times people just want to get them in the car, meet them there, sell them a house, and not educate them and empower them. And I think, Todd, we came from the school way back in the day, just treat your customer with ultimate respect and give them the proper information and counsel so they make good decisions. And if they're not ready today, they'll be ready 6 months, a year, 2 years down the road, but they'll appreciate the honesty and the wisdom you provided. And I think that's paramount for realtors to understand that. And, you know, the problem today is a lot of times realtors are thinking about their needs. Okay, I got to make this deal, so I've got to make my payments. And you can't think that way. Like, and people can see that, and they can read that, and they can feel that. So if you're working from the heart and with integrity and just trying to give the best possible counsel, you're going to have a client for life. And that's why we've been around for a long time, because we do the right things. Sometimes we make a mistake, you own it, you fix it, but your intentions are pure.
Yeah, no, I couldn't agree more. And again, you've shown that as a great example, because again, you know, it's funny, because, you know, There are people even with a simple investor. You know, I met them 10 years ago and it just wasn't right for them. They come back 10 years later, kicking themselves saying, if I had only done this. And they're like, well, look, it wasn't right for you at the time. So you can't always go back. And it's just, you know, you and I could talk about stories about, wow, we should have bought 10 of those homes, right? When they were 200 grand. Today, they're a million plus, right? I mean, you know, you always look back and you say you should have, could have, would have. But today is today. And so when you take a look at, you know, what we are dealing with today as far as a market, would you agree that, you know, one of the things that are going to drive the market is seriously a lack of inventory? And when I mean inventory, I don't mean listings. I mean actual physical buildings because of the demand versus the actual physicality of buildings. So in other words, you throw a million people more into the mix, you just don't have enough buildings.
I mean, that's definitely an issue today. And I believe the other problem is sometimes the people coming here are probably, you know, listen, I don't want to get into this too much, but our crime rates have never been higher. There's so many things going on today that we didn't really experience before. Canada we knew 20 years ago is a little different. So today, I've got a couple of cars. So I've had to get a couple, you know, German protective dogs, you know, just shepherds. Yeah. So which is unfortunate because, you know, I love these dogs that have become part of the family, but, you know, we did it for a different reason, which, you know, really, we never thought we had to think about that way before. So I think today, you know, you've got to really manage the numbers because, you know, you're bringing all the quantity. So excited. So many people coming here. And I think we just don't have the infrastructure to support us, in particular the GTA. So we're creating our own, you know, creating bigger challenges than we need. And I'm not sure what the government is trying to do to kind of deal with this objection, because I think the number of new houses, the new starts to facilitate the people coming in is not nearly going to fit.
Yeah, it's not going to handle it. And speaking of handling it, I'm going to handle going to a quick break, but I'm going to have more with Sam McDaddy. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this. And welcome back. So in the hot seat today is Sam McDaddy. And, you know, Sam is an old friend of mine, but incredible real estate broker, real estate agent. I mean, like, you know, quintessential, has the experience, has also the advice. He's got an incredible team in the GTA and all sorts of locations. And Sam, just before the break, you know, I was just talking about, you know, supply and demand. And I know I beat this horse a fair bit. And a lot of people are probably getting sick and tired of me saying there's not enough inventory. But we did have that conversation where the fact that is first and foremost, and I'm not putting Sam on the hot seat here. I am telling you the government lies, okay? They lied about the numbers. Bank of Canada lied about what they're doing with the interest rates. But truth be told, when we take a look at the numbers, you know, 1.5 million coming into Canada last year. And, you know, when you think about bringing in that many people, how many roofs do you need? Sam, we talk about inventory all the time. And one of the most important things is that the builders started pulling back in 23, you know, Ford government, love or hate them, you know, they released the Greenbelt and then they had to pull it back. And I think what it did was it made a lot of builders reconsider their positions to the point where 1 in 5 sites delayed. And so not only did we need, you know, more commitment and hundreds of thousands more properties being built, it actually went backwards.
Yeah, listen, I think one of the things we talked about off air was that also the developers, builders here are going through their own challenges, right? Because, sure, you know, that some of them got in over their head, and with the rate increases and the cost of borrowing funds, I mean, they've had to kind of either close shop or reconsider their next steps. And so that's been a challenge. So all this kind of compounds to the fact that inventory becomes increasingly a bigger challenge, right? With developers putting things on hold, with a land availability or lack of availability, I think we've got a big crisis right now. And I'm just not sure if the government's given enough attention to how to address it efficiently.
Yeah, I think you know, they're kind of like the horses left the barn and now they realize that there's nothing in the stables, and then they turn around and say, hey, let's solve the problem. You know, the old analogy, right? And here's the truth. I think it's too little too late. And for them to play catch up, when CMHC came out with a report last year in 2023, and they said, you know, for us to play catch up, we need 3.5 million more homes built than what we're averaging right now. So we do about, in Canada, about 220,000, 230,000 new builds. Last year, that number was actually a little bit lower. And yet CMHC said, look, we need by 2030, we need 3.5 million more. And recently an economist just quoted saying we need 5 million, okay, to play catch up to even balance the offset of our immigration. 5 million in 7 years. Sam, I know you're pretty handy. I know I'm pretty handy. I just don't think we can build it.
That just tells you the challenges we're going to have in front of us. And I'm just not sure the thought process is why I continue to allow so many new folks coming into the country when you have so many issues right now internally, right? So I think to me, they've got to put the brakes on until they figure out this, you know, rather relevant issue.
Yeah. So let's talk about inventory in general then. You've specialized in resales, but you have worked with a lot of builders in the past. That's one of the great things about your team. You're very diversified, but let's talk about people that actually own properties then. You know, the fact that you've got this mass immigration coming in, the demand for properties, it's pretty straightforward to say, look, real estate's going to be a good place to be for many, many years just because of the lack of inventory.
You know, people have talked about the fact that, you know, rates are going up and renewals, and it's going to cost people to sell, and, you know, there's going to be some challenges, et cetera. But I think that's more than offset by the demand that's excessive, and that'll continue to be the case. So that's why our market has been so resilient. That's why our prices, you know, have stabilized and are starting to climb up again. I think, to me, the perfect time to have bought in hindsight would be in November, December, with Q4 of last year, when people were very nervous and sellers had some nervousness and fear. Now sellers also feel the market's picking up, so they're going to hold tighter to their price. They're increasing prices. But I think our market, because of the supply and demand dynamics, I mean, we're always going to be a good place. And price points, for sure, as we alluded to, have now started to climb.
Yeah. You know, when we got recognized, maybe because of the Raptors, but when Toronto got recognized as one of the top cities in the world, right? They did a cost analysis. They did, you know, they take a look at pricing. And I know you've been down in New York. What's a 600 square foot unit go downtown in New York? Like, way more than Toronto. Like, they're three, four, five times the price. And so are the rents, you know. And I've always said, look, if you want to be on the world stage, it costs.
Listen, you can't deny it now. Toronto's a world-class city. We've got flaws, and we've got some issues internally, but we're viewed as a world-class city, and we have so many good things going on here. So there's a lot of things we need to clean up. But I think from a city perspective, how the world views us, we're, you know, still one of the desired places to be.
Yeah, but the value, and what I'm getting at is that we're actually quite inexpensive for a world-class city. I mean, take a look at Sydney, take a look at Tokyo, take a look at New York, take a look at, you know, San Fran. Like, there are cities that are four times the price for the same square footage.
Listen, Toronto's prices have gone up, but they're still low relative to the other world-class cities.
Yeah, I mean, that's a big part. And I think perception is very important for people. They have to realize that, you know, yes, Toronto prices have gone up. And you know, especially during our career, Sam, I mean, I remember, you know, some of these condos going for $200 a square foot, and people would sit there and say, what, $200? You know, you buy a condo in downtown Mississauga for, you know, $120,000. And, you know, today it's like, you don't get a parking spot for that. You know, we've seen prices obviously appreciate that much. And then that goes back to the narrative that we've got a lot of first-time buyers out there that are saying, you know, I'm never going to own a home. What do you say to those people?
I believe they have to find a way to get into the market, right? And whether you go up or out to get your foot in the door, because you need to start building equity, right? And I think that's the key name to the game, right? So it doesn't matter how you start, because really people usually don't get to their, you know, multi-million dollar house from the onset, unless you're, you know, the top 3 or 5% income earners. You're building it slow and steady. And I think you need to find a way to get in, because real estate is the best proven long-term wealth creation vehicle.
Yeah. You know, it's kind of funny that, and no, folks, I didn't put those words in Sam's mouth, and nor did my producer, but Aiden's probably listening and watching me, because here's the thing. One of the things we just had during our seminar that we had a couple of weeks ago was the fact that I'm encouraging all first-time home buyers that can't buy their home to buy an investment property. But because you can go out and do it for half the price or a third of the price, at least get your money working for you. You know, people have to remember that it's a percentage, not so much the value. So if you buy, let's say, an investment property for $250,000, right? If it goes up, debt goes down, you can get 25% return on your money. It's way better if you get it working for you. And a few years from now, you can refinance, sell it, do whatever you need to. But guess what? Your money grew for you. And this is one of the things that we've been encouraging, Sam, you know, and I'm pretty sure, because I know you've got people that in your office that do work with investors. We try to encourage people to, like, you know, you buy, you hold, and you let your money work for you.
listen, the best long-term wealth vehicle. And for us, we tell our clients, even, you know, back in the day, let's say you buy a place for $500,000, right? And you work really hard, diligently pay it off. And there's ways you can pay it off in 8 to 12 years, call it 10 years. Prices on average double 10 years, double every 10 years. So now you've got a property that you put in a very little amount, call it $25,000. And in 10 years, you've took all the right steps. It's worth $1 million that's paid for. So you become a millionaire. And if you don't do that, you're spending that money frivolously because you're not, usually people aren't disciplined savers, right? So to me, real estate, just is, which is, you know, incredible what you're doing, because you're encouraging people to invest in real estate. And all the people I've talked to who have worked with you have been very, very happy about multiple units for that reason, because real estate is the best investment vehicle. And if you have somebody, you know, on top of it managing for it, it's even better, right? But I think if you kind of keep the rule, you know, rule of thumb in mind, every 10 years prices double, and if you're able to leverage and pay that mortgage down quickly, what better vehicle to build wealth creation?
Yeah, no, it's huge. And I mean, again, I know this is one of the things that you teach your team, obviously not just for your clients, but also for them themselves. And so I'm gonna pose a question just before we go to a break. And Sam, I don't want you to answer it yet, but I do want you to answer it when we come back. And it is, you know, to all you realtors out there, I want to know, how many of you actually have a pension, okay? And have you really thought about how much life will cost when you get a little bit older? You know, the numbers are staggering. And for those of you that are self-employed and you haven't established a pension, well, you know what? When I have Sam come back right after the break, we're going to talk about this, because this is something that is very near and dear to our hearts, because, you know, we see a lot of people, you know, working till they're in their 80s, and it just doesn't make sense. But what makes sense is we'll be right back after this. So stay with us. And welcome back. You know, it's amazing how fast an hour can fly by, especially when I have a great guest joining me. And first time in the studio here. He's joined me numerous times on the show before, but it's first time here at the at our new studio out in Burlington, Sam McDaddy. And Sam, you know, it's been amazing catching up with you. And one of the things, you know, I shared the story with you about meeting up with a lot of the realtors from my past, right? Because, you know, I kind of obviously moved on from being a realtor and became a simple investor. And, you know, it was interesting because, you know, one of my my broker said, "Hey, Todd, can you talk to people about investment real estate and what the purpose of it is?" And then I started thinking to myself, yeah, but how would I talk to realtors about their pensions and the lack of? You know, it's amazing how many people, you know, and it's, you know, it's funny because realtors, when they come into the business, they think it's going to last forever. You know, commissions are always going to be there. And it was amazing how many people are in their 70s and 80s and they have to sell because they just don't have a pension.
Yeah, that's a real shame, because if you've been in this business 30, 40 years, well, first, you're in business for yourself. So, you know, there's no inherent pension or government pension, et cetera. So you need to start early. It's never too late anyway, but the earlier you kind of get this reinforced in your mind that, hey, you got a bit of residual income. I was a bit fortunate, Todd, when I was in, you know, I did my MBA in University of South Carolina. I was going back to watch a college game with one of my friends who was a fee-based financial planner at the time. And I was starting to have some level of success in real estate. This was my mid-20s. And he goes, "Sammy, how you doing?" I said, "Oh, I'm doing good, Davey. I'm making, you know, X dollars. You know, things are great." He goes, "Let me ask you one question. If you couldn't work for 6 months, how would you be?" I sat back and I thought about it. I said, "Yeah, not very good." He goes, "Sam," and I'm happy I had that discussion because it was kind of an eye-opener. He goes, "Sam, you got to start thinking about building residual income. With all our clients, are, you know, we're fee-based only. We talk to them about how much you need to live on a monthly basis. Let's back into that number, get that residually, then you can effectively retire. And after that, you're just enjoying life and you're working because you want to work, not because you have to work." And so from there, I started, you know, giving mortgage money out, buying properties, paying them off, getting cash flow. So I got to the point where I set my goal. I got there kind of quick, but then my lifestyle changed. So I had to reset, right? And said, okay, now I need more than that, right? And so, but from day one, I understood that delayed gratification. I don't want to buy fancy cars, do this. Let me invest in things that are, you know, appreciating assets. And when I'm in a good place, then I can do what I want. I won't feel it because I've got myself set up properly. Most people do it the reverse. Let me get that, you know, nice sports car. Let me get that big lease, which goes nowhere, right? And does nothing for you, right? And eventually when things go wrong, you've got to return it. And, you know, we saw that in the early 90s. We actually benefited from seeing a tough market to say, hey, we don't want to be those people, right? And I actually benefited from seeing my dad lose his business when I was young. And, you know, I was in my teens and it kind of taught me, I don't want to be that person. I want to make sure I do the right steps. And so I think realtors today, if they have good mentorship and counsel, will learn early to invest. And I think to me, I'm all things real estate, be it giving mortgage money, being, you know, buying real estate properties because it's bricks and mortars. It's what we know. Sometimes you go into spaces you don't know and you can get decimated. So for me, that's my comfort zone. I think just like you, Todd, and I think realtors, if they learn that from the early stages, they'll be able to sell real estate and they can sell it in their 70s, 80s, and 90s. For fun, because they want to, not because they have to. Big and, distinction.
Yeah, right? That's huge, Sam, and good advice. Speaking of advice, so if you were to go back and give somebody brand new coming into the business today, what advice would you give a brand new realtor?
Well, I think firstly, you know, Todd, you and I kind of perfected this a little bit, but market too. Like, understand that you want to build a brand that's identifiable and recognizable, but Rome wasn't built in a day. So you can't be Todd Slater or Sam McDaddy the first year, but no, hey, listen, if I take 10% of what I'm making back to my business, and you got to be all in, because most realtors want it, but they don't want to pay the price for success, right? And we see that there's what 90,000 realtors say on the board, and what, how many don't sell houses at all. So if you're going to do it, really be serious about it. Just like you said, when you built your business, hey, I'm doing this, I'm going to be all in. When we did it, we had the same mindset, right? But I also think at some point, when you get to a certain level where you're selling a reasonable number of real estate, get yourself an administrator. So you shouldn't be putting on lock boxes and doing things that are $15, $20 an hour tasks. If you're worth $100, $200, $500, whatever your value per hour is, you have to be able to kind of leverage that, because otherwise you're going to burn out. And I think one of the things that kept us fresh was that, hey, at some point I realized the things I don't like to do, I'm just going to take it off my plate, right? And enjoy the things I like to do so I can stay fresh, hopefully, for years to come, decades to come.
Yeah, no, and you know what? You did that probably better than anybody. You know, one of the things that you also did, and, you know, I feel that you pioneered a lot of the real estate teams and the approach to it. How does somebody make a jump from being just a realtor to really creating a team? Now, you just mentioned, you know, make sure you have an administrator. Even if you're just a standalone agent, it's always good to have a good administrator. They're going to help you with your paperwork, the stuff that most realtors are not very good at. But how do you make that next step, Sam? I mean, it's huge. And, you know, I've seen people that say they come out with their name and say team. And I'm thinking to myself, I've never heard of you before, but now you're a team.
Well, I think the problem is, and for us, it came organically and out of necessity. So we started growing to the point where I couldn't physically handle the business at the level I wanted to provide the service I wanted to. So we brought in some good friends. And back then, teams weren't really in vogue. So we were kind of trial and error, trying to figure things out. Craig Proctor, as we talked about, had a team, and I respect him immensely because he kind of, you know, did a great job kind of with that concept back in the day. But I think, to me, a lot of times people just want to have a team because they think it's fashionable, right? I think that doesn't make sense. I think you want to build to the point where, out of necessity, the team evolves and grows. Not, okay, Sam or Todd have a team, so I should have a team too. And first, you don't have business to give, you don't have the expertise, you don't have, so you're doing it sometimes prematurely because you think that's what you should do or you're taught that. But I think for us, it happened out of necessity and organically. And then today, it's once you're at that place where your business is growing, where you need to add pieces, well, there's a lot of different models you can follow. Back then, we're just trying to figure it out. So there's, you know, you can now tap into models which make sense, and that's going to be fair, because really, being a solo practitioner, being a team leader, they're two different, you know, entities. And you might be a great solo practitioner, but you may not be a great team leader, right? So yeah, you got to figure out what works for you and if you should kind of actually go in that direction. Because we've seen people kind of build teams, and they shouldn't have built teams. They should have just stayed as a solo agent. And those team members eventually leave because they don't have the right, it's not the right environment, not right infrastructure, et cetera, right? So I think teams are at the right time and place to make a lot of sense, but just not because I want to have a team.
Yeah. No, I think that's perfect advice, because again, as you said, it's kind of in vogue when somebody says, and they always, let's create a team. And, you know, talking to realtors and speaking to as many of you that tune in, you please take Sam's advice at heart. Okay. You know, you create a team because you have to, not because you want to. There is a difference, and you can't start out of the gate with a team if you don't have the business, you don't have the ability to do things. And the one important thing Sam did touch on, all you new agents, here's the one thing I can tell you. Everybody knew Sam McDaddy's name, okay? Everybody knew mine as the Todd C. Slater brand. We focused very much on our names in marketing, you know? Sam's a much better looking guy and he had his picture up, but I didn't, okay? I focused on my name. But in the end, the one thing is everybody's got to see your name, and they got to see it a lot. If they don't see it, you know, almost every single week, they're going to forget it. And that's probably the best advice I can give. I don't know, Sam, if you want to top of that up, but I think
That's perfect. Todd, I remember you and you're very unique with your branding messages, and it stood out, right? And I thought, wow, that's very powerful. And I think for us, we want to make sure our name was synonymous with real estate. And it, you know, at the beginning, we didn't have the capital resources to spend what we're doing today, but we were slow and steady. And people have to realize that it's not overnight, right? But if you're trying to be in it for the long run, you do the right things, then eventually you'll have a powerful brand that people will think, yeah, real estate and Todd, real estate and Sam. And you can be that person, but know that it's not overnight.
Yeah. Well, listen, you know, I can't believe actually the show's over, but thanks, Sam. It's been amazing catching up with you. Thank you so much for joining us today in studio.
Always a pleasure, Todd.
So, folks, Sam McDaddy, you don't look at, if you're looking for somebody, you're looking for a solid team, you know what? Definitely look Sam up because he is definitely the best in the industry. Sam, what's your website that they can go to?
McDaddy.com.
Yeah, that was hard. Anyways, you know what? What a great visit. You know, great to have Sam join me in studio. And, you know, that's a wrap for this week. But, you know, we do have the Real Estate Talk Triangle coming up next week. I think Dave and Tim are going to be back in the house, which is going to be great to have them. We'll get everybody caught up on, you know, some of the stuff that's going on in the mortgage world. I don't know, is Dave's prediction going to come true? Is it going to be June or will mine? Please, Tiff, help me out here. I'm hoping that I win in April, but you never know what'll happen with the interest rates. But definitely great show that's going to be planned for the Real Estate Talk Triangle next week. And of course, I do want to thank my producers, Aiden, for making it simple here in-house every single week, and Ian Grant at head office, making sure I do what I'm supposed to do. And I do want to thank you for making us the number one real estate talk show in Canada. And it's always a privilege and a pleasure to be able to bring you the show every single week. And of course, I will be back next week as usual. I'm your host, Todd C. Slater. You've been listening to Simply Real Estate right here on News Talk 1010 Toronto.